With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Transportation Security Administration says more than 20 million people will take to the skies over the Thanksgiving holiday travel season. On the other hand, AAA estimates about 90% of travelers will still choose to drive to their holiday destination. And talking dollars, Kayak says prices for travel in general are up, quote, pretty significantly, about 60% compared to last year. Would you come
my way? This is the Trevor Carey Show. Did you burn out to the air? On the Valley's Power Talk. Would you come?
The Farm Bureau says if you're feeding about 10 people, it's going to cost you about $53 this year. And that's a pretty big increase from last year. Turkey is going to cost you a lot more. Prices are up about 24%. Pretty much everything you need to make a pie, including frozen pie crust, up 20% from last year. 3 pounds of sweet potatoes, those will cost you $3.56. That's up 4% from a year ago. Can't forget the dinner rolls, a dozen of these. $3.05 is the cost.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Trevor Carey Show. I am Jonathan Keller on the Valley's Power Talk. Happy to be guest hosting for Trevor. Great to be with you on this Thanksgiving Eve. No official title for that, but it's always good to be here on Power Talk. The number for your calls to the Trevor Carey Show is 559-230-4242. Again, 559-230-4242. We have a lot to talk about today. You heard a little bit of it there in the news break at the top of the hour, but I want to wind back a little bit and discuss something. We mentioned that most families are driving for Thanksgiving, but there are some families that are flying. One of those is the first family of the state of California. That is Governor Gavin Newsom. He joined his wife, or I should say, as they call it, first partner, at a resort in Mexico, along with his children. He is taking off for a whole week. And the great news is that means everything is back to normal, right? California, you know, we've beaten COVID. Everything is good. No more state of emergency. Actually, no. Last week, if you missed it, and you would be forgiven for missing it because the media, other than this station, tries to bury these types of stories, the state of California is still in a state of emergency. Governor Newsom actually extended the state of emergency declaration through March of 2022. And that means for those of you counting at home, yes, he will have had, by the time this is over, barring any interruptions, he will have had his emergency powers for a full 2 years of his 4-year governor's term. So joining me to talk about this today, there was a lawsuit that was just filed by my good friends and the group called Advocates for Faith and Freedom. Joining us on the phone is attorney Netta Higuera. Netta, great to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here on Thanksgiving Eve.
Yes. Well, I know you guys are hard at work. Even during this holiday season, there's never an opportunity to rest. Religious freedom always needs defending. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about this lawsuit that Advocates for Faith and Freedom has filed. It was just released, I think yesterday was when I saw the press release. But I'm grateful that you guys are not taking a vacation when our freedoms need protecting.
Yes. So we filed this lawsuit in Orange County Superior Court on behalf of the Orange County Board of Education and the organization Children's Health Defense. And the defendant is Gavin Newsom. And we're asking the court for one thing and one thing only, and that is that the court rules that on the constitutionality of the state of emergency, and as you said, the indefinite nature, I mean, it at least is going to be going on for 2 years, as Gavin Newsom is, you know, there's no emergency for him. He's having vacations in Mexico, yet this continues. And the statute is pretty clear, the law on this, that he has to terminate the state of emergency at the earliest possible time. And the only way the state of emergency can continue is if there's immediate threat to property or persons. And so it's arguable, maybe it was justified, that the state of emergency early on in 2020, you know, to give the governor flexibility. This was a new virus, and, you know, we didn't know what we were dealing with. But here we are, almost 2 years later, and, you know, as stadiums are full, he's in Mexico on vacation, yet our constitutional government has not been restored, and he continues to cling to the power for as long as he possibly can. And under the law, we don't think that's appropriate.
I 100% agree with you. And I want to read two tweets from Kevin Kiley on Twitter, at Kevin Kiley CA. These were sent last Tuesday. And again, if you guys missed out, I think it could not be said better than Assemblyman Kiley. He says, first, Newsom says he'll continue the state of emergency as long as COVID is a threat. In other words, he plans to permanently abolish constitutional government. Which, I mean, sounds hyperbolic, but it's hard to argue with that. Second one, and this is the remarkable thing. Not only did Newsom say this, but his own Secretary of Health, Dr. Mark Galli, says there are no metrics for the state of emergency, and they will keep the mask and vaccine mandates even if and when it ends. So, I mean, Netta, it really is remarkable to me. I know I shared your basically what you said when this virus first came out last year. I was one of those conservatives that even some of my conservative friends, I think, gave me a hard time because I was actually a little bit willing to give Governor Newsom the benefit of the doubt. I was willing to give even Dr. Fauci the benefit of the doubt because, look, you know, you don't know if this is going to be like Ebola. You don't know if there's going to be millions upon millions of Americans that are dying. You really had no idea at the very beginning. So I think that when it comes to a state of emergency, a lot of us think of something that is a true time-bound emergency, like, you know, wildfires that we see every year in California, or earthquakes, which, thank God, we've not had major earthquakes in the recent past, but, you know, our state has definitely been plagued with those from time to time. But in this type of a situation, I mean, it almost boggles the mind that he is so brazen that he thinks he can absolutely get away with this. And literally, again, he issued this declaration just last week. And then less than a week after he declares the state of emergency is continuing, he hops on a plane to go to Mexico.
Yeah, I think he doesn't know the definition of an emergency. Maybe. I don't know. It's not an indefinite thing. And even if he didn't know, he can read the law, and the law says that it shall end, quote, shall. First of all, shall. It's not discretionary. And at the earliest possible moment, that conditions warrant. And, you know, the worst part about this, and kind of what prompted us to bring this lawsuit, was we represent Pastor Rob McCoy in Calvary Chapel Ventura, Calvary Chapel Thousand Oaks. And early on in the pandemic, the county of Ventura was threatening to arrest Pastor McCoy and threatened to board up the building so that people don't go in. Anyway, they filed a lawsuit. The county of Ventura filed a lawsuit against Rob McCoy, and we filed a countersuit against the county and the state. And then recently, the state, Governor Newsom's attorneys, on the record, stated that the lawsuit should be dismissed as moot because there are no public health orders closing down churches, and there won't be in the future because things are different now. Because now we have vaccines, now there's no threat that the hospitals will be overwhelmed, and we know what we're dealing with. So his attorneys went on record to dismiss that case, saying everything is fine now. We don't need to move forward with this case. Judge, just dismiss it. It's moot. It's not important anymore. We're in different times now.
It's just so shocking to me because it seems like they really are trying to have things both ways. When the emergency is happening, then they declare, well, you know, this is unprecedented. There's never been anything like this. We don't have any frame of reference for this. So you have to give us the maximal authority. You have to shut down all of our constitutional systems of government. You can't require these types of restrictions to be approved by the legislature. You can't have some sort of metric. You can't have even religious freedom exemptions. Like, I mean, we saw last year, even here in Fresno, you know, almost every church that I know of here in Central California shut down, at least for the first 2 weeks, you know, the 2 weeks to, to flatten the curve and then the 30 days to slow the spread. But there were other churches. I mean, God bless them. There were people that were shut down. There were churches that were shut down for months. I mean, Netta, I have a friend of mine, and God bless him. I love him. He's a good guy. He's a pastor of a small church down in Southern California. But they meet primarily at public buildings, like either community centers or on campus at, you know, elementary schools. They did not get back into their building to hold their first in-person service until about 6 weeks ago. I mean, they literally were having to meet virtually for a year and a half.
Wow.
And that, I mean, I don't think that Gavin Newsom, maybe he doesn't care, like you said, maybe he doesn't know the definition, or maybe, as I am afraid, I think he might just be drunk with power. I mean, you look at what happened with the recall election, and even though that, I think, did put, at least at the time, I think it scared him straight a little bit. You did see that he started to reopen things. He started to relax things a little bit. But now that he has beat the recall and that he is looking ahead to reelection next year, I mean, he's got to be wondering, you know, you remember the famous phrase from President Trump, you know, joking that, hey, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and I wouldn't lose any support. That seems to be what Gavin Newsom has kind of taken to heart as well. You know, look, I guess I can just keep everybody in a permanent state of emergency. And, you know, what are you going to do? Sucks to be you.
Yes. Okay. And that is the rationale that I think he's in that same position. I agree with you. And that's why we're continuing to file lawsuits. And we're not going to stop. I don't care if it's 10 years from now and it's still a state of emergency. We will still file lawsuits. It doesn't, like, it can't just be the new normal. And so, yeah, it's, and historically throughout the history of civilization, when someone in power is given authority, they usually don't just give it back. And so I'm afraid that that's what's happening now, that, you know, he got drunk off that power. And now he just wants to stay intoxicated and continue to drink it. And he's allowed to, because, you know, with the state that we live in, but we are trying to fight against it, and we're not alone. As you mentioned, Kevin Kiley has been a big proponent from the beginning of ending the state of emergency, because as a legislator, he's the one that should be considering whether children in public schools should be vaccinated. That should be his job. He should represent his constituents in Sacramento, pass the law. We should have an opportunity for our voices to be heard. Maybe the law will still get passed, but we'll still go through the process that was established, that we have a voice and the elected officials represent us, and that laws aren't made by California Department of Public Health officials behind closed doors. We don't even know their names.
That's right.
They're telling us what to inject our children with, you know, and that just can't continue. And so we're going to keep fighting. I don't care if we lose, we're going to keep fighting, you know, and that's just what we all have to do.
Well, Netta, we're going to take a break real quick right now, but can you stick around for one more quick segment after the break?
Yes, of course.
That'd be great. Okay. So when we come back, get on the phone now. If you have a question for Netta, or if you want to talk about this, the number for your calls for the Trevor Carey Show, 559-230-4242. Once again, give us a call here at the Trevor Carey Show. Talk about this vaccine mandate, the endless state of emergency, 559-230-4242.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. You're listening to the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
Welcome back to Power Talk. I am Jonathan Keller in for Trevor Carey on the Valley's Power Talk. Happy to be with you today, this fine Wednesday, Thanksgiving Eve. Hope wherever you are traveling, if you're driving now, driving tomorrow, that's my wife and I will be heading down to the in-laws for a day. looking forward to celebrating Thanksgiving. Hope you all have a wonderful time. And remember that despite all the craziness out there, we do have an awful lot to be thankful for. One of those things I am thankful for is our guest, Netta Higuera. Netta, can you remind me, what is your actual title there with Advocates for Faith and Freedom?
I am an attorney, so an associate attorney for Advocates for Faith and Freedom.
And can you tell us, I know a little bit, we talked at the beginning of the show, they are a great organization. If you're not familiar with Advocates for Faith and Freedom, you can just go to faith-freedom.com as their website. You can find out a lot more about their organization. But Netta, can you tell me, you guys have been very busy over the last year, lots and lots of opportunities to file lawsuits, to offer legal advice. Now, can you tell us a little bit about some of the cases that you guys have been involved in over the last year? And I know you guys have had some significant victories over the last year.
Yes. So like you said, we have been quite busy. There hasn't been a shortage of pastors, churches, just your average people who needing help because the government is interfering with our rights. But some of our big cases, we filed a lawsuit when the governor banned singing worship indoors. And thankfully, along with other legal organizations that likewise were fighting this, we defeated that, and we actually were able to get attorney's fees and had the state settle and sign an agreement not to put in a worship ban ever again. I still can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth that the government
I know.
But yeah, so that was a great case that we, thank God, were able to win. And then we were one of the first organizations to file a lawsuit against the church closures. So we filed our first lawsuit in April. Even at the beginning when, you know, it did seem like things we were just uncertain, but we still knew that you can't close the church. And so this was in San Joaquin County for the church in Lodi. And we won that case as well. And we're still fighting. We have a church in San Jose, to Santa Clara County, where the county fined this church.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Calvary Chapel, San Jose, over $3 million for not abiding by COVID mandates. And so that case is ongoing. The county's relentless. Now they're going after Calvary Chapel, the private school associated with the church. Actually, just today, they're telling us that they're going to get a warrant to go in and search the school.
Wow.
We've won some cases, and there are still some on the church closures that we're still fighting tooth and nail. And our goal is to uncover that there was no good reason for the government to close churches. They had no evidence that churches are super spreaders or whatever else.
Netta, you say that. I want to just interrupt here and say, for a lot of these people, you might be listening, folks. It's hard to... With everything that we've had over the last year, all the different issues, I think it can be hard to remember, easy to forget, how bad and how oppressive the government was, especially here in California, starting last year. I mean, for those of us, if you're here, you just kind of swim in the water. You know, a fish doesn't realize he's wet. I don't think in California we realize quite how bad things were in comparison to the rest of the nation. I mean, San Jose, Santa Clara, that whole region, the Bay Area, was the first region, before even the state of California, we were the first region to enact these incredibly oppressive and draconian mandates and lockdowns and shutdowns. And we're really the only region in the country that still has them to this degree. I mean, even the state, the region of Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, even their mayor, Mayor Muriel Bowser, she's getting ready to repeal the mask mandates and other mandates because they've just realized it's untenable. It's creating an incredible drag. But Netta, you're absolutely right. I think that I think that what Governor Newsom has done and what they have continued to do is they take an inch, and if we're willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, that has to be premised upon the fact, predicated upon the fact, that if we give up a small amount of liberty for a season, it has to be taken away from the government. It has to revert back to the people. And the thing that really scares me, I mean, I hate to say it, but if there is a real, true epidemic in the future that is much worse than COVID, I mean, we could imagine something, Netta, that would be maybe as infectious as COVID, but is much more deadly. In the future, the government has basically blown all of their credibility. They have really blown any goodwill that they might have had with the general public by completely abusing their powers and trampling all over constitutional government.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be anything more serious. It can be the flu. You know, the flu is deadly to kids. So let's close down schools. It's a whole new precedent that has been set. But, you know, I always like to see the progress that has been made with the lawsuits and the political pushback through the recall election. Even though that wasn't successful, it's still, as you said, that's when things started opening back up. So it's just to continue, I just want to encourage everyone listening to continue praying and doing whatever God puts on our hearts, whatever battle that looks like, whether it's, you know, you're in your work, your school, to have your voices heard at school board meetings, or whatever it is, that we all are part of this, and we don't have to take everything on, but just the little bit that where God has placed us and equipped us in this season, that we continue with perseverance moving forward.
Absolutely. So, Netta, we're going to be coming up on another break here, but before we do that, I'm going to let you go, but tell me, what is the website people can go to if they want to follow this case, they want to follow the other great work that Advocates for Faith and Freedom is doing? Where can they go to find out more online?
So just as you said, faith-freedom.com. And we have case updates, interviews, press releases. You'll find everything on our website.
That's awesome. And I know you've also got some great things. If people follow on either Twitter or on Facebook or YouTube, there's some great videos of Netta and Bob Tyler, her boss, talking about these issues. Netta, thank you again so much. God bless you and your family. Keep up the great work. And you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thanks. God bless you. Bye.
All right, everybody. We will talk a little bit more about this and some of the other news of the day, including, as we mentioned, there was a huge verdict out of Georgia today, the Ahmaud Arbery case. So we'll talk about that, but I want your calls as well. Give us a ring. Number for the calls to the Trevor Carey Show is 559-230-4242, 559-230-4242.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. The Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Jonathan Keller in for Trevor Carey on the Valley's Power Talk. Happy to be with you today on a wonderful Wednesday. Looking forward to Thanksgiving. If you want to call in, share what your very favorite Thanksgiving food is. I got to say mine. I mean, of course, turkey is always good. I don't understand those families that do any meat other than turkey. I mean, if you want to add ham or if you want to add some roast beef or something, I guess, but you got to have turkey on Thanksgiving. That's kind of a given. But my favorite side has got to be probably green bean casserole, although mashed potatoes and gravy is good too. Okay, so if you want to talk about that, or if you want to talk about Governor Newsom's state of emergency or our next topic we're about to launch, give us a call. The number for the Trevor Carey Show is 559-230-4242, and we would love to have you join us, 559-230-4242. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this case of Ahmaud Arbery. Some of you may have been following this story out of Georgia. And interestingly, it's getting a lot of press, especially today, and it's getting a lot of comparisons with the most recent other case of the death of individuals, which was the Kyle Rittenhouse case. And I think in this case, I'm going to go out on a limb, and some of you might disagree. If you do, please call in. I'm happy to hear your calls. But I actually think that the verdict of the jury in both of these cases was, drumroll, correct. I actually think that the system of justice we have in the United States, it is not perfect. We get things wrong from time to time. But it is still just about the best system in the world. Is there injustice? Yes. Is there corruption sometimes? Yes. In fact, we'll talk about that in regards to the Aubrey case and how that was revealed. But in general, the system of justice that we have in America beats just about anywhere else in the world. I would ask you, think about it. For those of you who are complaining, and I know we have some liberals that listen to this show. They like to hate listen to Trevor, so hopefully I'm providing your daily anger quotient if you're listening in. But I know there's some people that think that everything, oh, America's racist, it's horrible, it's backwards, you know, all these horrible things about America. Look, I don't deny that there are problems. I think you'd have to be a fool to completely deny that America has some growing left to do. We are not a perfect country. We do need to correct injustice where we find it. But I also think that generally speaking, we are miles better than any other country in the world when it comes to justice and when it comes to certainly our trial system. Trial by jury is something that I think a lot of people just assume, well, I mean, that's just how everything happens, right? No. That goes back into the early foundings of not just this country, but England and British common law. But other than that, if you did not have a trial by jury, if you were only going to be held accountable to a single judge, or if you were going to be held accountable just to the whims of whoever the sheriff was who arrested you, I mean, you could be in horrible shape because you were not a friend of the law enforcement apparatus. If you were not a friend of the king, you could lose everything. You could have essentially maybe rights on paper or rights in theory, but you would not have actual rights, and there was no way for those rights to be vindicated, to be protected when it came to either you committing a crime or being accused of committing a crime, or a crime being committed against you. And look, folks, let's be honest. We do have a history in this nation, especially in certain parts of this nation, where there was racially motivated crimes and there was racially motivated injustice. You look all throughout the history of the South, it is absolutely true. Look at the case of Emmett Till, for example. He was a young boy from the North who went down to visit friends in Money, Mississippi, and he was accused of whistling at a white girl, a white woman, who was when he was going in to buy bubblegum. And instead of being, you know, reprimanded or, you know, maybe beat up or something like that, he was pulled from the house where he was staying with his cousin in the middle of the night at gunpoint by the husband of the store clerk and by some of her relatives. He was never seen alive again. He was taken out and beaten to a pulp. He was killed, and then he was thrown in the river. And the trial for him, the trial for Emmett Till, really shocked the nation. And it basically reminded America back then, this is back, I need to get the exact date correct for you here. I think it was in the 50s. It might have even been in the 40s. But the trial of Emmett Till reminded, 1955, he was lynched in Mississippi. It reminded the nation back then that there was racial injustice that was tragically alive and well. And one of the most horrible situations about it in the trial, it was held near where Emmett Till's body was found. And at the end of that trial, the individuals who were brought up on charges, it only lasted for 5 days. And it only took them a short amount of time to come back and realize, oh yeah, let me look here. Let me give you the exact number. The all-white, all-male jury, because both women and blacks had been banned from the jury, they acquitted the defendants after just 67 minutes of deliberation. And one juror said, if we hadn't stopped to drink pop, it wouldn't have taken that long. So it is absolutely true that juries can horribly miscarry justice. They can absolutely ruin things and fail to provide justice. But it's also true, and this is something that I think even our friends on the left should be celebrating, it's also true that when there is a a bad case of true misconduct when there is essentially, I mean, more or less a lynching what happened here. Yes, it's true that Mr. Arbery was not hung from a tree, but he was deprived under the 14th Amendment. He was deprived of his rights to life and liberty without any due process of law. If you're not familiar with this, the facts of the case, essentially what happened was Ahmaud Arbery was a young black man. I believe he's 25 years old. He was running through a neighborhood there in southern Georgia, and two individuals, a man and his son, and then later one of their friends, saw him running, and they assumed that, well, we've heard some rumors that there were some burglaries, and we think he might be the person that was burglarizing those things. Even though there was no evidence that he had committed any burglaries, even though there was no evidence that he was even acting that suspicious, other than the fact that at one point on his jog, he stopped to look at some new homes that were under construction. Well, guess what, folks? If that's what constitutes looking suspicious, I've done that. I've driven, I'll freely admit, they're building a whole bunch of houses near me, out near Fowler and 180. I've driven through those neighborhoods when they're under construction. I've even come home sometimes late at night. I've driven through those neighborhoods late at night. Doesn't make me a suspect. Doesn't make me suspicious. And yet what happened to Ahmaud Arbery, as he was running, these individuals get in their pickup trucks. They basically almost run him off the road. He's trying to run away and get away. And then they get out of the truck and they try to perform a so-called citizen's arrest on him. And they basically, he doesn't know who these people are. He doesn't know what's happening. He's scared, justifiably. One of the individuals pulls out a shotgun to try to engage in this citizen's arrest. And Mr. Arbery tries to run. He tries to get away. He's ultimately accosted by one of the individuals. He tries to either grab the shotgun or push it away and escape. And in the commotion, these individuals shoot him and kill him. And again, they kill him purely on the basis that they thought maybe he looked kind of suspicious. Now, I mean, maybe this is not as bad. It is not as bad as Emmett Till, because it was not premeditated. It was not in the middle of the night. But it was absolutely unjust that he be killed just for the quote unquote crime of jogging in a neighborhood. And I think that in this case, as I said, I think the jury looked at all of this information. And they, after the break, we'll talk about the fact that there was a situation where the prosecutor actually knew these defendants, and it actually wasn't the case that the individuals were charged immediately after. It took several months before the district attorney's office even decided to bring charges on behalf of Mr. Arbery and on behalf of his family. But it's one of those things where I think that this was a sad case of the individuals basically choosing to attack somebody and then either not being safe enough, but they absolutely caused his death. And that's why they were charged and convicted today. The youngest man was convicted of all 9 counts. The dad was convicted of 8 of 9 counts. And then their accomplice was convicted of 6 of the 7 counts of murder. And when we come back, I'll read a little bit more about those charges. But I got to say, I think this is the right outcome. I think that the individuals should not have been doing what they were doing. Just like there was a lot of arguments from people last week about Kyle Rittenhouse saying, well, he shouldn't have ever been in that area with a gun to begin with. Maybe not. But I think these individuals, these men, absolutely should not have been in this area with a gun. They should not have tried to do a citizen's arrest. Or, come on. Of Mr. Arbery. We'll talk about that more when we come back. Give us a call. Here on the Trevor Carey Show, the number is 559-230-4242. 559-230-4242.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to The Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Jonathan Keller in for Trevor Carey on the Valley's Power Talk. Happy to be with you today. So in the last segment, we were talking about Ahmaud Arbery and this case. I want to read just a little bit of the story here. Just I know if you're like me, you're not necessarily a big fan of the New York Times. But I want to read just a little bit of the story about how bad this case was. It's, I think, pretty consistent to realize that there is racial injustice that goes on. But it's also true, tragically, that I think, and I'll say this, one thing that I think a lot of conservatives get frustrated by is the cheapening of true racism. Because when you have our friends in the media and you have our friends on the left that go and basically say everything they don't like is racism, they cry racism for things that are clearly not. They try to say with CRT that kids are inherently racist. They claim that they have to be teaching about racism, you know, to 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds. Look, I agree that we should teach equality. We should teach everybody that, you know, hey, I'm a Christian. I think that everybody's created in the image of God. I think that you should respect and be kind to other people. But the idea that you would say to 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, oh, look, there is systemic racism and you have white privilege because you're a 6-year-old. Kindergartners cannot understand those types of concepts. It is not, I think it's absolutely ridiculous that those would be the types of things that our media and that schools would be trying to teach. But that being said, I also do think that a horrible side effect of this, beyond just poisoning the minds of young people, beyond just creating a lot of tension and division, one of the horrible things about this is that it cheapens and demeans instances of true racism and instances of true prejudice. And sadly, you know, it's like the boy who cried wolf. It's a situation where it makes it harder to see and recognize real injustice when we come across it. So let me just read you quickly, if you're not familiar with this case, maybe you've seen it in the news, but you're not as familiar with it. So on February 23rd, 2020, so this is 3 months before George Floyd was killed. On February 23rd, 2020, Ahmaud Arbery, an unarmed 25-year-old black man, was murdered in a neighborhood near Brunswick in Glynn County, Georgia, in the United States. He had been pursued by 3 white residents, Travis McMichael and his father Gregory, who were armed and in one vehicle, and William Rhody Bryan, who was in another vehicle, and he videoed the pursuit and the shooting. So, again, this is 3 men, 2 men in one pickup truck, a father and son. The other one was following behind. After Travis, the youngest of assailant, exited his vehicle and wielded a shotgun, Travis and Arbery engaged in a physical confrontation during which Travis shot Arbery. So it says police interview transcripts detailed that Gregory initiated the chase after seeing Arbery running past his house, and he suspected that Arbery had committed burglary or theft, but had no evidence of doing so. So just, again, as a reminder, this entire tragic incident was based on the fact that these 2 men, father and son, they see a young black man, a 25-year-old black man, jogging outside their house. And their immediate first assumption is, I bet he just got done robbing someplace. I mean, I'm sorry, folks, but that's racist. There are a lot of things that are not racist. But just seeing somebody running and assuming, well, the only reason he's running away, the only is, and he, you know, look, here's a black guy running away. It must be that he's doing something wrong. He must be guilty of something. So we're going to go and take it upon ourselves to investigate. So they had basically gone and chased him down again in their pickup trucks. And as they tried to do this so-called citizen's arrest, it ends up in a confrontation, and he ends up being shot. And I have to ask you guys, for all of you listeners out there, no matter what your skin color is, if you had a group of individuals, again, no matter what their skin color was, if you got stopped on the road, you're just out for a jog. I've been out for a jog here in, you know, Fresno, down in Sunnyside. I've been out for a jog many times. If you go for a jog, and all of a sudden, a couple of guys in pickup trucks pull up next to you, they box you in, and the video shows this. They basically try to chase him to an area where they would be able to box him in and prevent him from escaping. If you're trapped, and then one of them gets out and wields a shotgun at you, Are you going to just be calm and, oh, no big deal, I'll just listen to what these nice gentlemen have to say? No, you're going to be freaked out. You're going to try to do everything you can to escape from the situation. And how much more so if you are a young black man and you are running in Georgia, given the history, the sad, tragic history of so much of what has happened in the South? You're going to be ultimately, you know, initially on guard. You're going to be nervous. You're going to be afraid. And I think that Mr. Arbery was absolutely within his rights to be scared. And these individuals, if they suspected there was a crime being committed, if they suspected there was something wrong, okay, call the police. Absolutely. You know, maybe even, you know, take down some information and say, yeah, this is what it was. I think he came from this area. Maybe you can go check and see. But the idea that they would take it upon themselves to engage in this vigilante justice. And just don't take it from me. I'm not the one that's calling it that. Let me read you real quick what the governor of the state of Georgia said. Governor Brian Kemp releases a statement and he said, quote, Ahmaud Arbery was the victim of a vigilantism that has no place in Georgia. As legal efforts continue to hold accountable all who may be responsible, we hope the Arbery family, the Brunswick community, our state, and those around the nation who have been following his case can now move forward down a path of healing and reconciliation. I think that is a pitch-perfect statement. Bravo, Governor Kemp. I think we need to look at this and realize that one single case being decided the right way cannot atone for decades of racial mistreatment and racial prejudice. But at the same time, I think the fact that the jury got this case right, and only just a week after they got the Kyle Rittenhouse case right, I think it reminds us that maybe we should have a little bit of humility if we were not inside that jury room. Maybe we should take a deep breath and say, okay, you know what? I wasn't there. I didn't watch every minute of the trial, but maybe the jury knows better than I do. Maybe they understand what I need to more than what I understand. So we'll be back after this here on The Trevor Carey Show. Thanks again to Trevor for letting me guest host. And we have a special guest at the top of this hour, so don't miss it.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.